This is China Business Cast, a weekly discussion from the front lines of business in China. We're here to get detailed and get personal with experienced entrepreneurs making things happen in China. If you want to learn from on-the-ground accounts of how business actually gets done, this is the program for you. Today's guest, Mike Bellamy, is a business owner, author, and a bona fide expert in China sourcing, with over a decade of experience doing business in China. Mike is the author of the book, The Essential Guide to China Sourcing, and founder of PassageMaker, a China sourcing and contract assembly firm with a staff of over 150 specialists. He is also the chairman of the advisory board at China Sourcing Information Center, a not-for-profit organization that exists to educate, develop, and advance the China sourcing profession. Very glad to have you on the show, Mike.
It's my pleasure to be here on the show with you today.
Great. So I have a very specific goal for today. My goal for today is to leverage your extensive China sourcing experience and give our audience a roadmap for sourcing in China. So We obviously don't have enough time to cover all the details, but I'll think of it as giving them a compass rather than a turn-by-turn navigation to sourcing in China. We'll outline the important parts, and then we'll point them to additional resources when necessary. How does that sound?
Sure, sounds good.
Okay, great. Before we jump into that, I'd love to hear a little bit more about your experience. You know, you've achieved great success doing business in China, but can you take us back and give us a little brief overview of your China story? When and how did you get here first, and how did you get to where you are today?
Sure. I'm originally from a small town outside of the Rochester, Buffalo area in upstate New York called Perry. And when I was a student in college, undergraduate, I decided to try out a few years as an exchange student and went to Japan, where I studied Japanese factory management and quality control and language in Osaka, then a year in Tokyo. However, my interest was always in China. One of the reasons I wasn't able to go to China initially is because when I was an undergraduate, it was just a few years after the Tiananmen Square incident, so the exchange programs had dried up. So I went to Japan instead, enjoyed my time there, but I really wanted to get back into the China action because by the mid-1990s, you know, that's where the action was. The writing on the wall was clearly, hey, China is a force, that there are opportunities, and we need to deal with it. So I received my MBA from the University of South Carolina, and the day after graduation, I was back on a plane to China to work for a British consultancy, help setting up joint ventures and structuring foreign investment in China. Now, soon after that, I started my company, PassageMaker, and we serve as an advisor to foreign buyers, meaning Westerners, that want to come to China to set up their supply chains. And, you know, I appreciate you billing me as an expert, but, you know, I kind of cringe when anybody says they're an expert on China sourcing or China in general, because it's such a massive marketplace that changes every day. So, yes, I've been around the block. I've learned a lot of things in my 10 years, but perhaps more important than trying to say I'm an expert, I'll just be honest and say that I made a lot of mistakes and try to help out others, keep them from falling into those common pitfalls. So perhaps what makes me unique is that I do have a lot of experience in China, both good and bad, and I'm willing to share it. So in addition to PassageMaker, which is my primary business, I also volunteer at the China Sourcing Information Center, which is a nonprofit dedicated to, as you mentioned, helping educate other foreign buyers. I also have the honor of serving on the advisory boards of an inspection agency called Asia Quality Focus and a China-based law firm called ChaiBridge Law. So I've got a few different perspectives on China, if you will, and happy to help out and visit with your audience today.
That's fantastic. And I really appreciate your candor, Mike, and I'm really looking forward to learning from you. So with that, let's jump into it. Let's get to the meat and potatoes. So for today's talk, I think the best way for me personally to learn about something is to have a concrete example. So I'd love to walk through the sourcing experience with a hypothetical product. Say, for example, if I have this great idea, my iPhone is always dying at the end of the day because it doesn't have enough battery to live through the whole day. And wouldn't it be great if I had an iPhone case that I could snap on, but also extend the battery of my iPhone? So I have this great idea for a product, and I know, you know, China is where everything gets made these days, but I don't know where to get started. how do I even go about, you know, defining what I need to do?
Certainly. Well, since it is a new idea, the first thing you absolutely need to do is register your IP in China, your intellectual property. You may have taken steps to register the IP back home, but that doesn't give you coverage in China. So luckily, the good news is that it's very affordable and the process is fairly straightforward. So register your intellectual property in China. Keep in mind that China is a first to register rather than first to market system, unlike many countries in the world. So it's whoever registers the idea first basically owns it. That means that if your supplier or your competitor or just some random person sees your idea and they go register it in Beijing first, you're going to have major problems because, as you said, everything is made in China. So imagine if you couldn't make a product here, let alone sell it here in China, because someone else registered your IP. So long story short, first step is register your intellectual property. I'm not a lawyer, but I'd be happy to point your listeners in the direction to the law firms that I've used for IP and such. So first step, register your IP.
That's a very good point. And I think maybe something overlooked by a lot of Western businesses coming into China. I think even Apple got into some trouble with their IP, didn't they?
Yes, and the sad part is that they had to pay out a claim of millions of dollars. I don't know, I think it was $20, $30 million, something crazy like that, to retain the rights to the, I think it was iPad. Had they spent a few thousand dollars up front to register it under their name, they would have been protected. Because believe it or not, if you play by the China rules, the government and enforcement officials will actually support you, but you have to play by their process.
I see. Okay, so that's a great first thing to check. Now, although this idea is new to me, I guess there's a chance that there's already some people making something similar in China, or maybe it's not that original of an idea as I originally thought, right? How do I go about, I guess, finding the right resources to see if I can source this product or something like it in China?
Okay, first let's take a step back. When we talked about registering your IP, usually the first step is to do a patent search. Luckily, it's very affordable in China, so a couple hundred dollars you pay to an English-speaking Chinese lawyer, they go out and make sure that it's available and no one else has your idea already. So let's assume that your idea is open. And now to answer your question, how do you go about finding a source in China? And I think before you take that step, you need to ask a couple questions. For example, what's the realistic order size? And is your product highly customized, just a slight tweak, or are you combining off-the-shelf technologies that are readily available into your finished product? Because the answer to those questions will determine the strategy that you should use. For example, everybody wants that China price, but they don't realize the difference between going China direct and China factory direct. Depending on your size and your customization, you might be better off purchasing components at retail or wholesale. If your size is very large, then of course going factory direct makes sense. So you need to evaluate your own situation, because different products, meaning different order size and customization, determine what the strategies would be.
I see. Let's say I want to start off small, so with the minimal amount of investment required, and see sort of how it develops. You know, maybe once it gets some traction in the Western market, I can ramp it up and get more and more customized in terms of the product itself. So maybe let's talk about the for the small order size or getting started stage, what would be the, how would I go about that?
Sure. So regardless if your order size is large or small, you really have to define, is your product off the shelf? Are you tweaking the existing design, or is it totally customized for your unique process? And if unfortunately your order is small and you're highly customized, that's going to be very difficult to achieve in China. It certainly can be achieved. Talking sourcing China direct can be accomplished, but you have to realize that when you go with a new product, you have to explain to the suppliers what you're looking for. That means you need to have engineering specs in place. if you just take general designs or, you know, back of the napkin and ask your supplier, hey, make this, not only will your idea perhaps be stolen, you lose the IP, but also you won't be getting accurate quotes because you're not explicit about what you want to buy. So perhaps the hardest thing to do in China sourcing is small volume, high customization. So a lot of entrepreneurs, rather than buy something that's off the shelf and has no innovation, or go the route of something that's highly customized, they perhaps will tweak existing technologies. So you can say that there are a lot of tweakers out there, and it's not easy, but it's easier than total customization.
I see. That's a very helpful outline. And I guess that helps set the expectation a little bit in terms of, you know, everyone just thinks, oh, I have an idea, I'll go get it made in China. But it's not as simple as that, right?
Oh, that's right. And when we say go get it made in China, talking about China Direct, you know, some of the clients that I support, they're buying a product that's slightly tweaked or just off the shelf, and they're coming to the wholesale market, sometimes even going to retailers in these electronics districts and buying, you know, 1,000 batteries, getting certain circuitry together or hardware. So, you know, there are opportunities at retail, wholesale, and of course the factory direct, which everyone wants to go, but you have to have a large order to go factory direct.
Okay, so let me just summarize a little bit from my understanding. So in terms of how sourcing from China works, I could go with something that's off the shelf. So say maybe there's like a small battery component and a small iPhone case and some sort of plastic container that snaps it together that I can somehow just sort of MacGyver together to become the product with, you know, these three separate off the shelf components. That would be probably the easiest and the cheapest upfront investment for me.
Correct.
For an initial product, right?
Right.
Okay, and then the next level I can go is a little bit of customization, but not something that's completely, you know, my unique design. Maybe I use the existing off-the-shelf components and, you know, maybe add a little logo here or add a little bit of branding, and that would be something that's a little bit customized. Would that be right?
That's correct. When I say tweaking, I'm not talking about significant adjustments to tool and die. For example, if you have a plastic snap-on case that's off the shelf, tweaking would be putting a new logo. Yes, you might have to pay for some art files, you know, for the pad printing and such, but that's not expensive. However, if you're going to change the form, fit, or function of the that plastic housing, then you're talking about opening new molds. That starts to get expensive. So tweaking is taking existing technology and hardware and just adjusting the branding, basically, and maybe the packaging and such.
I see. And then for the final custom, the complete custom product, I would need to have a complete set of engineering specs and probably a fair amount of communication between the factory and myself and my engineers in order to make sure that the product is made up to spec and everything works properly.
That's true. I would like to add that you need to have some level of engineering at any level, whether it's off the shelf, tweaking, or a complete custom. Anytime you rely on the supplier to give you what they think you want, there's an opportunity for mistakes to happen. So even if you're buying something simple off the shelf, your engineering might not be that intense, but it should at least define the product that you want to buy. What are the attributes, the color, the shape? Once you get to tweaking, then maybe the engineering is more about brand specification and packaging, how the product is put together. Once you move beyond tweaking and go to customization, then you're talking hardcore engineering, a DFM, a design for manufacturing package that specifies the materials, the schematic for how the product is put together, the tolerances, all of those things. So there needs to be a level of clarification to the supplier, regardless of what product you're buying, no matter how simple it is, you need to be specific. But once you start talking about customization, then you need to get really specific.
That's great to know. And in terms of your experience seeing, you know, the different project coming through China, are most of them a combination of off the shelf and tweaks, or are most of them completely custom? Which is the most common one?
Well, that's hard to say. You know, if you look at all products coming out of China, there is a lot of simple off-the-shelf, you know, toys and plastic parts and simple stuff. Yeah, I don't have the statistics, but most of the projects that I get involved with are tweaking or customization because I'm providing a service to manage the supply chain, find and coordinate the vendors. So it's more complex, and thus there's a role to play for a third-party support, like my company, Passage Maker. So personally, I'm involved in a lot of tweaking and customization.
Okay, great. Maybe we can dig a little deeper to the entire process involved in, say, a product that's slightly customized or what we call a tweaked product. Actually, how would we go about finding the right resources?
Well, if your order is very small, then you're probably dealing with some type of broker intermediary that's going to consolidate those parts. That means that person or company now has total access and exposure to how your sensitive information gets put together. Generally, I work with customers that are a little bit larger that perhaps are worried about their intellectual property, and they desire my company, Passage Maker, to be in the middle as a firewall to protect the information. So we would go out and source the battery suppliers, then the case suppliers, then perhaps the packaging suppliers separately. So those three suppliers don't see the finished product. That way, it's a lot harder for them to knock it off or for any one person to see how everything comes together. So most of our projects, we're looking at multiple suppliers in China at a bill of material level, line by line. That also helps keep the cost down because if you, for example, go to your case supplier and say, "Oh yeah, I need a battery as well," they're going to recommend a battery supplier that's a relative, that's a friend nearby, so it's close to them, and they're probably going to get a kickback along the way. So when you go out there and look for the bill of material line item by line item at a national level in China, it drives the cost down.
That's very good to know. And I see that's where having some third-party help to put all of this together is definitely valuable. So what is the next step after we've found some suppliers that seem to be of the right fit?
Well, first off, I'd like to, you know, thank you for pointing out that sometimes it does help to have an advisor or support. But my participation in this interview today isn't designed to promote my company or my services. And you know, I'm happy to point out all the free resources that are available on websites like the China Sourcing Information Center.org, where people can DIY, you know, they can do it themselves sourcing in China. So I'm not here to say that everybody needs a hand in China. You know, I hate those businesses that use scare tactics to say China is so mysterious, you'll never be able to source there. You know, don't believe it. You can't, if you're willing to do the homework, spend some time on the ground in China or find the right partners, you can certainly get things done in China. So I don't want this to turn into the typical scare tactic. I would prefer to give your readers, I'm sorry, your listeners, an inside view of how things get done. And with that, yeah, I think where the next question you were going with is, you know, what happens next after you have your idea? How do you go out and find the right supplier? Would you like me to walk you through that process?
That'd be great.
Okay, so let's assume that you're looking for either a finished product or a component. You know, you go to globalsources.com, great website. You know, they rank their suppliers, they validate the suppliers. But if you type in something like iPad case or iPhone case, you're going to get hundreds of suppliers. So the problem nowadays, thanks to the internet, isn't how do you find a supplier, it's how do you find the right supplier for your particular requirements. So the first step is to be very specific about what you're looking for. For example, what is your dream supplier? Do they have 1,000 employees, can produce 100 units a second, an office in Hong Kong, able to invoice in US dollars, 10-year history? Or are you looking for a factory that perhaps is closer, a case factory that's nearby your battery factory so you can keep the logistics costs low? Are you looking for a factory that is had experience selling to your market in Jordan or Jamaica or Japan? You know, be very specific about what would your ideal supplier look like. And then after you've developed this attribute list of what makes your ideal supplier special, then you go online and you start comparing those attributes with the hundreds of suppliers that you just found on Global Sources, try to narrow it down to maybe the top 15. And at that point, you don't start talking price yet. You just maybe ask a few questions, visit their websites in detail, talk to their salespeople, and confirm that the factory actually meets your criteria for production, for example, size, experience, export ability, whatever your ideal candidate looks like. You're now comparing these suppliers. Notice that I said don't talk price, because as soon as you start getting quotes back, you will almost subconsciously try to convince yourself that that supplier with a low cost is the right fit for you. And that's almost never the case. So narrow it down to like three or four suppliers on the other attributes before you start talking about price. It's always better to focus on quality first, get down to a handful of suppliers, and then pick the one partner that has the best price quality ratio rather than just going price, price, price. That kills a lot of products, because suppliers, sometimes they underquote in order to get your business, and then you realize later that they didn't really have the capabilities you want. So don't be seduced by the siren song of low price. Go in there looking at the other attributes for your supplier, and then at the last phase, start talking about price.
After you found the list of potential suppliers that fit your criteria, is the next step to get a sample from these suppliers?
Certainly. Sampling is very important because it proves that they have the ability to make the product. So sometimes you'll ask for a sample and the supplier that you pre-qualified says, well, we need to open tooling for that, or we're not ready to ship, we haven't made it. Well, that's a red flag, because they told you, how can they quote something that they've never made before? So the sampling and supplier identification process go hand in hand. Sometimes if you're a small buyer just getting started, don't be upset when the supplier says, you know what, you need to pay us for these samples. If the samples are readily available, that's a good sign. And if the pricing is affordable, okay, you have to build that into your costs. What I like to say is, hey, supplier, you've never met me before, but I honestly plan to buy X amount of units, but I need sampling up front. If I pay the normal price for these samples, for evaluation purposes, and if I place an order later, will you give me a discount on the full order? Usually they say yes. So that's one way of showing the supplier that you're a serious customer while still getting a discount later. And the China game has changed a lot. You know, 10 years ago, you just get off the plane in China and everyone's jumping for your order. So free samples. Now, as a small buyer, and with China focusing its attention more on the domestic market, rather than 100% focused on the export market, as a buyer that doesn't have a famous brand, you actually have to prove to the suppliers that you're going to be a good customer to work with. So paying for samples and making the process easy for the supplier helps. You know, they're bombarded with requests via online web directories where they find leads. So part of the sourcing process is to show the supplier that you're a legitimate partner for them.
That's some great advice. So say we get the samples from the three different suppliers that we've pre-qualified. How do I evaluate which one is the right one?
Well, at this point, then you start to balance off price, lead time, quality, of course. So it is okay to bring in price at this point. Once you get to the sampling phase, price does become a large decision-making factor.
I see. So say we went through the evaluation and we've found a supplier that we're quite happy with. Is the next step to place an upfront payment for the order? How does that work?
Well, generally, before you pay any money, you want to make sure that that supplier, not only that the sample is decent, but that the factory itself is qualified to make what they say they can make. For example, I've had samples delivered to me that were purchased by another factory. I've also had samples of my own product sent back to me from the factory saying, yes, this is what we can make, under the impression that it was a sample from their production line. So because you get samples, it really doesn't mean anything unless you can confirm that that sample was from the production line at the factory. Keep in mind, now we're talking about factory direct. If you're dealing with wholesalers or retail in China, then you're picking samples off the shelf, basically, and you don't need to get involved in the auditing so much. So at the wholesale and retail level, you or your representative are in China, they go to the wholesale market, they see, they look through a bunch of cases and they buy 100 of them on the spot market. But for the, if you're dealing factory direct, then sampling must be confirmed to have taken place from the actual production line. And one way is to fly yourself over to China. But if you don't speak the language or have the time or expertise, the good news is you can hire third-party inspection agents and auditors who for a few hundred bucks will go to the factory and do a professional audit to determine, is this supplier, do they have the legitimate ability to make the product I want? Do they have an ISO system for management and quality control? So when we talk about is the supplier legitimate or not, we're looking at two things. One, do they have the quality systems in place to produce the product that you want to buy repetitively over and over again? So maybe they get it right this time, but they're going to get it right next time. Well, a quality audit will determine if they're legitimate or not. The other verification we need to perform is more traditional due diligence. Is this supplier in a financial position to be around in 3 months in order to finish my order? The last thing you want to do is get into bed with a supplier that's on the verge of bankruptcy, pay for a bunch of tooling, place an order, and then they go out of business with the deposit in, with your deposit in their pocket, business is folded up. So spend a little bit of money, a couple hundred bucks on auditing, a couple hundred bucks on due diligence. At the end of this interview, I'd be happy to let you post online some of the service providers that I use for those verification services. So a key step is to make sure that everything that has been told to you by the supplier, sampling as well as pricing, quality, is the truth. So before you send any money for the real order, you need to verify everything.
Okay, I see. And just to set the expectation, is it fairly common or, you know, fairly frequent that you find something that doesn't match up?
Unfortunately, yes. China's getting better and better, but it still can be tricky, especially if you're new and you don't know the questions to ask. There are a lot of brokers and intermediaries that say they're the factory. And what happens is they don't own the factory. So when there's a problem, they blame it on you, rather than actually working with the factory to determine what is the root cause, why did this product show up with the wrong specs. So if you're talking about wholesale and retail level, you come to China on a buying trip, if you will, okay, then this due diligence isn't nearly important. But if you're in a factory direct relationship, yeah, you have to verify everything because the cost of making a mistake is significant. Most projects die because the buyer didn't find the right partner in the first time. So the worst thing that can happen is you start doing business with some supplier that's not perfect for you. And then a year later, when you've got orders from your customer and you're ready to fill those 10,000 units to Walmart and your supplier can't deliver, you're out of business. So it's so important to spend a little bit of money and time up front and find that right supplier from day one. It pays dividends.
Okay. And say now we've found a supplier and everything checks out. Are we ready to go on to the next step?
Sure. But, you know, assuming that you've defined the product in great detail, how it's packaged, what are the specifications? Now you've got a purchase order or some kind of contract in place. So that's a commonly overlooked step. A lot of new buyers don't bother to set up a proper contract or purchase order, because if you can't specify what you're ordering, good luck having it delivered. Also, if something was to go wrong, if you don't have a purchase order or a formal contract, good luck getting some support from the Chinese authorities or a court case. You just really need a purchase order, ideally bilingual, that defines what you're buying, how many units, what are the materials. If your product is off the shelf, it's not as important, but it is still important to have a purchase order that defines the basics. If your product is customized, then your purchase order should be very specific. So before you make that payment, have a purchase order. Get that purchase order signed by the supplier.
I see. I'd be reading about some of the horror stories that happen to people who don't have purchase orders and the lack of options they have when something goes wrong.
Oh, yeah. I mean, most of the suppliers that I deal with, some of them are like family. You know, our children, our pen pals, we vacation together. So I'm not saying that Chinese suppliers are out to trick you, most of the time when I get called in to do some review of what went wrong, it's often on the buy side. The buyer wasn't clear about their specifications. The buyer failed to tell the supplier what were the expected delivery terms. There was no contract that defined non-compete, non-disclosure. So, when we China gets a black eye in the media for all the headaches involved in sourcing and quality issues, but a lot of times it's the buyer that's the root cause of the problem. So it is up to us as professional buyers to at least be clear about what we want to purchase.
Yeah, and I kind of see the trend. I mean, even in this interview, I'm just pushing, what's the next step? What's the next step? When can I get to the part where I get the product? But really, there is a lot of upfront work and due diligence that needs to be done before you get the final product that is translated from a design to an actual physical product.
If you're tweaking or doing customization, absolutely true. And even off the shelf, you at least have to be aware of these items and do a decent job of having contracts and auditing and such.
Okay, so with the right factory and the right paperwork in place, what's the process for now getting that physical product produced?
Well, usually things don't start in China until there's a payment made. Maybe if you're a large buyer, you can get terms, meaning you'll pay the supplier after delivery. But for most of the medium-sized buyers that are in your audience today, they'll probably need to issue some type of upfront payment. The supplier is going to ask for 100%. Of course, everything is negotiation. Usually, you can get 30%. Or perhaps 50% deposit, depending on how much leverage you have. So there needs to be some transfer of funds, but don't make those funds, I repeat, sent to your supplier until you've got a contract in place, a purchase order. So let's assume you have that PO in place, it protects you, then you make the transfer. Chinese suppliers generally don't use PayPal or credit card, so we're talking about a bank transfer. Here's a little tip for your readers. If you haven't specifically asked your bank for a decent rate, they'll probably stick it to you and charge something like $50. I've seen up to $80 per transfer, regardless if you're sending $100 or $100,000. But if you go to your banker and say, "Look, I'm starting to do business with China. I need a corporate or a more preferential rate," you can get it as low as like $15 from the U.S. to China. And if your supplier and the buyer are both using the same bank, I use HSBC all the time, then the transfer fees are even lower. So that's a little tip to keep the cost down when you're sending money. But basically, you're going to have to give a deposit, and then the remainder is due when it ships out. However, that doesn't protect you from quality mistakes. So you want to structure your supplier's payments with their performance, meaning you don't make that final payment until you or a trusted third party has visited the supplier to confirm that the product conforms with agreed specifications and standards. Someone is actually on the line looking at the product, pulling it out of boxes, saying, "Yes, this is good." Send the report to the customer. You look at it. Okay, this meets my standards. Ship it. If you don't have that quality gate, you're opening yourself up to a lot of potential exposure for problems. Because even if you have your payment structured so that maybe you pay the supplier after delivery, well, if the stuff's junk, who's going to cover the cost of air freight to replace it or replacement parts or rework in the US? Structuring your payments is an incentive, but it's not a end-all method of protecting yourself. You still have to do those inspections.
I see. And the upfront due diligence I see as a way of highly reducing the likelihood of issues, but you still have to be diligent at the end of it to check all the quality as well.
Absolutely. And some of the people that I visit with at trade shows or conferences or that I meet online, they say to me, "Mike, but I'm small. I don't have $200 to do an inspection." What I tell them is, if you can't afford a few hundred dollars for inspection, you shouldn't be sourcing from China direct. Go buy it online or deal with an importer or a wholesaler back home. If you can't cover these basic steps to protect yourself, it is gambling. If you want to gamble, fine, but if it goes wrong, you need to blame yourself.
Well said. Okay, so we've discussed everything from initially defining your requirements, finding a supplier, to the due diligence and paperwork that goes along with working with that supplier, to finally payments and getting a product. Is there anything else that we need to keep in mind in terms of working with the supplier and working with the factory?
Well, you know, I would like to point out that there's nothing inherently wrong with working with a trading company or an intermediary, especially if your orders are small and that broker can provide some value, perhaps leveraging their other customers' orders. But if you're looking, the way that I look at middlemen, there are good ones and bad ones. The good ones will provide real value. The bad ones are just trying to make a deal, and then they build in a hidden margin for the life of your orders that you don't know about. So a good broker or middleman will let you know how much they're charging, where they're making money. Be careful of the double dip. Some unethical brokers, some of them have Western faces as well as Asian faces. You cannot just assume that because someone's from your home country, they're going to be respect you more than a Chinese person. That's not the case. There's good and bad apples in all nationalities. So my point is that the tricky, unscrupulous broker will tell you that they have your best interests in mind, that they're only working for that percentage commission that you pay them. But behind the scenes, they might be getting a cut or a kickback from the supplier. So before you deal with any factories or brokers or intermediaries, everybody that you deal with, you need to do an element of due diligence. So, you know, trust but verify. Whether you're dealing with a logistics company, a broker, or the actual factory, everybody needs to be checked out. The simple way is just ask for references. If the broker or the trading company, whatever they are called, can't give you a couple happy customers to talk to, run away. Same is true for the factory. Same would be true for a logistics partner. So it does sound a little bit scary, but you do need to do your homework at every step.
Speaking of logistics, I guess the final step after you have your product inspected and everything is fine and you've made the payment and the product is yours, are there any special considerations in terms of customs and logistics?
Sure. A lot of new buyers fall into the trap of focusing on price only, and the supplier gives them a quote for EXW China. EXW means that you, the buyer, takes title to the goods in China. Because there are a lot of local taxes and local logistics fees, that price is going to be lower than a FOB price, which means freight on board, meaning the supplier is responsible to get the product on the boat at the harbor in China. So when you're thinking about logistics, you need to compare apples to apples and oranges to oranges. So make sure that your suppliers are quoting you at least FOB, freight on board at the China port, because if you're buying directly from their door, it gets very complex. Now, you're responsible for processing the exportation. You would need to have special licensing. You know, I've got it, but I've been in business for 10 years and I'm based in China. So I help customers that need to buy direct from the factory but don't have the import-export licensing. But for your typical listener out there, focus on FOB, stay away from EXW. But in terms of how do you manage the logistics, it's really not a question of do you manage the logistics or not. It's a question of who do you hire to manage the logistics for you. It's not realistic that you're going to organize the 20 different parties that are involved, from the shipper to the freight forwarder, the customs broker. You know, there's so many parties involved. Generally, you're going to save a lot of time and money, especially if your orders are small to medium size, to just find one quality third-party logistics service provider, a 3PL, third-party logistics. And I wrote a white paper on it. You can download it at chinasourcinginfo.org. But basically, the key point is when you find a logistics partner, focus on the port at which you're going to import into your home market. It's let the supplier deal with getting the product on the boat and out of China. And just about anybody can organize the sea freight. That's the easy part. The hard part is getting the product into your country, making sure that there aren't any hiccups with customs clearance. So the best way to do that is to go down to your nearest port, or at least pick up the phone book or the internet and look for logistics companies, freight forwarders. They're sometimes called 3PL as a catchy term. Look for those entities that are in your neighborhood that you can talk to in your own language and ask them if they have experience importing similar products from China. You know, there might be a logistics company that's imported similar products, but they specialize in Indonesia. You want a company that has experience importing that product into your port, into your destination market from China.
Great. And with that, I think we've talked about everything from having an idea initially all the way to getting the finished product on the boat. Obviously, we've only covered scratch the surface and try to give a general layout of how things are done. And we'll link up to the great resources you mentioned during the episode as well. With that, I'd like to wrap this episode up. Before we do that, I'd like to give you a chance to give the audience a final parting message and also a way to connect with you.
Sure. Well, I'm pretty easy to find. I'm all over the content at the ChinaSourcingInfo.org, the China Sourcing Information Center, CSIC. And in terms of what I would like to leave the audience with, you know, if you only take away a few things from this discussion today, I hope you'll remember to spend the time to make sure that you find the right supplier or partners up front, so do your due diligence. And the second most important thing, perhaps even more important, is that you need some type of quality gate to make sure that the product you ordered is what's about to ship. Before it ships and before you make that final payment, do an inspection. If you just follow those two tips, it'll save you a lot of headaches.
Fantastic. Thank you very much, Mike.
Oh, my pleasure.
Hope you've enjoyed this episode of China Business Cast. For more about the program and to join the conversation online, check out ChinaBusinessCast.com. Thank you for listening.